This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This is a song that's been on repeat for a while here, the last few weeks for me. A guy named Role Model. And the song sounds very alt-country, but he's like a rapper, which I find somewhat interesting.
Huh.
Yeah, it's just a dude. His name is Role Model. But I love this song. It's called Sally, When the Wine Runs Out. It's really, really good. You can find it on the Bumper Music List, which I will publish a little bit later this hour. All the songs that we play, I put up there on the list. Maybe one or two people check them out, but I appreciate those of you who do. We have our Fish Fry Friday tour continuing this Friday at Assumption Parish. Come out and see us. We'll be there. And as added incentive, I'm going to have cookies. I've been baking like crazy. I made regular chocolate chip. I made chocolate chip. I made chocolate with white chocolate chips. I have my dough is chilling right now, Sue.
That's
I'm making white chunk macadamia nut cranberry tonight. So I'm going to have an assortment of cookies on Friday at the Fish Fry that the St. Louis County Health Department will probably come in and confiscate from me. But until they do that, if you come up to see us and say, hi, I'd like a cookie, you can get a cookie.
That's awesome.
I know. A little added incentive. But I got a little baking to do tonight. You know, the dough is chilling. That's a very important part of my process. I want you to know
it
that.
It is, actually.
My white chocolate chips last night, they didn't flatten out as much as I wanted them to. Mm. I'm not sure what
happened
there.
That's okay.
Hey, they taste good, though.
Exactly.
We have, coming up a little bit later in the hour, Mizzou plays tomorrow night against the Drake Bulldogs. A lot of interest in that game because Drake has a great story. And Michael Admire, who's the voice of the Bulldogs, will join us here at 5:25. Plus, I have an audio cut of the day and I have a bunch of audio that I have not gotten to yet on the show. So we'll certainly get through that. But we do have a roundtable set. We were a little worried about that on Friday. Jane is not going to be there, so she had to travel this weekend. State Rep Steve Butts. Donna Behringer will be here, who's running for comptroller, and there's somebody else, and Ethan's probably yelling it at me right now, and I can't remember who the person on my side is, but we'll figure it out between now and Friday. Who is it? Oh, Lamping. Lamping's listening right now.
Yeah.
Former Senator
Lamping's
going to be here.
Me.
Hey, John Seiler is back with us. He is the Director of Higher Education Policy and a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. He's done just amazing work over the last few years on exposing a lot of these DEI situations and bans. But now, John, there's something kind of different because since you have these race-conscious programs in states where, as you put it, such race consciousness is illegal, what do people do? Well, they skirt the bans, don't they? How are you this evening?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, these as we've seen, university administrators, they still want to do what they've always been doing. And so there's plenty still to investigate when it comes to states that have pushed back on DEI policies in higher education and elsewhere.
And some of this is kind of like you can kind of cross-pollinate a little bit with DOGE because you're going to talk about a $10 million National Science Foundation grant that has faced this dilemma because this is a group that is trying to recruit minority doctors, right?
Yeah, so that's a good introduction to the story. The story that I've written two stories now about this program funded through the federal government, through the National Science Foundation, kind of our premier funder of the sciences. And the program is designed to recruit minority, that what they're referred to as postdoctoral fellows. And it's this clever model that we've actually talked about before, where universities set up a program where they recruit people to become fellows rather than full professors. And so it kind of bypasses the normal faculty hiring process that's very competitive, and a lot of people pay attention, close attention to it. This is a postdoctoral fellowship. So really, I've been told by professors, nobody really pays attention to how postdoctoral fellows are hired. And that's definitely true. And so what this program does is it gives $10 million to a bunch of state universities. And it's explicitly set up to create these programs at universities that don't have them, specifically in the University of North Carolina system, the University of Texas system, and the university, the Texas A&M University system. And so, you know, supposedly those three systems are supposed to create these programs that recruit minority postdocs and then transition them into full tenure track faculty positions. Yeah. So basically bypassing
it's
the normal
run.
Process.
Right.
In three states, or in two states that are very important. These are two states that actually kind of led the charge on pushing back against DEI.
Yeah, look, I remember talking to you in North Carolina. That was one of the big victories early on, I think, is when they peeled some of that back. So you're talking, John, about this group is called Rise Up with two P's. It's Reimagining STEM Equity Utilizing Postdoctoral Pathways. That's a bit of a mouthful. That's the big $10 million grant. That's what it went to. So essentially what you described here is an end run around some of the DEI bans. Is there a way to stop the end run? That's the next question, I guess.
Hey. I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, you know, here's the thing. At the state level, what needs to happen is there needs to be a lot more attention paid to what programs still exist, because it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody who is in the administration that you have this funding from the federal government and that this funding is set aside to do, you know, what they've said it's supposed to do. The you know, university has access to all of the grants that that are involved in pouring money into the institution, so they should know. And because they should know this, you know, people involved with compliance really have no excuse. And I guess they're just leaving the job to me to go and find these programs that already exist. But I mean, the elephant in the room is that this is a federally funded program. This is $10 million being spent by a sub-agency within the NSF that's devoted to equity, and it's being spent on a program designed to recruit and then hire what they call, refer to as minoritized, that just means racial minority or a specific subset of racial minorities, minoritized postdocs and eventually university faculty members. I mean, this is textbook DEI, and it's actually quite interesting that it hasn't just been blown away by DOGE and by the various executive orders that really should mean that this doesn't exist.
Yeah, but
this should not be a policy.
John, I want you to get in more specifics here because your reporting is really good. And you talk about what happened in May, I think it was May of last year, where you had these Rise Up people that conducted what you referred to as a reverse site visit. And then, you know, some of the language that relates to identity politics sort of gets exposed here, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And so I obtained... A large trove of records related to this program. It was really an astounding number of records. And one of them, or several of them, pertained to this meeting that the main team of administrators from universities that were running these programs and who had received the grants, where these administrators were giving a long kind of evaluative presentation to a panel appointed by the NSF. And that panel was really there to decide, to kind of assess the program's progress and actually, you know, decide whether they're going to continue to fund the program or whether they needed to amend the program somehow. And one of the records that I obtained was really interesting because this NSF appointed panel, they basically pressed the team and said, why are you not talking more about how the STEM disciplines are rooted in white European colonial norms.
Mm-hmm.
They said,
course.
You know, this is a problem. Why are you not addressing it more? And what's really interesting is that the team actually provided an answer. They said, well, we absolutely agree that this is a big problem. They even use the term, they say that STEM is rooted in cis patriarchal
of course.
Norms. That,
yeah.
That's, you know, non-transgender patriarchal norms. And they say, this is a problem, but we're not going to talk about it. Or at least publicly, we're going to downplay that aspect of our program and that kind of theoretical underpinning, because some of our members are in states that are pushing back against DEI, and we don't want this to happen. And that's really a snapshot of this behind-the-scenes glimpse that I got of the program, where publicly they've tried to scrub their the sort of DEI elements from how they carry out the program, but privately they remain very much committed to the sort of race conscious ethos that is just plastered all over this project and that they really can't escape from.
But if I was, you know, Anderson Cooper or someone on CNN, and thank God I'm not, I would say, John Seiler, all we're trying to do, aren't these universities simply trying to give minorities an opportunity to get into these tenure track positions? What's so wrong with that? What's so wrong with diversity, equity, and inclusion? We're just trying to help some folks out there.
Yeah, so I think that, like, a lot of people for a long time, we're really sympathetic to this. This is one reason why it took a long time for conservative lawmakers to really take this issue seriously. And there are sort of layers to the issues that I would point out. So most basically, hiring on the basis of race is illegal.
Right.
It's illegal not just per these state laws that ban DEI. It's illegal per Title VII of the Civil Rights Act. You cannot discriminate on the basis of race in hiring. So on its face, it just shouldn't be happening. It's not. It doesn't even have to be a big moral debate. But if you want to get into the big moral debate, I think a lot of people, a plurality of the country, whenever you take polls on this, say that this kind of affirmative action, these racial preferences in deciding who gets important positions, that the people oppose that. And people oppose it because there's a sense that this is unfair. And they really agree with the principles articulated in kind of the civil
Absolutely.
Rights movement, the
yeah.
colorblind principle.
I even saw some polling on this today, which you know, a majority of Americans said, no, we don't, you know, approve of that. Now, I also think, I would argue this, John, you might agree. I think the number would be higher if people were more informed about what some of this stuff really is, because I still hear people, even the folks on CNN like Aaron Burnett and others, that don't really seem to have a full, complete understanding of how nefarious some of this stuff is. And one thing that you point out, by the way, in your reporting before I let you go, is that when you were talking about Texas A&M, you exposed them a little bit with the Rise Up program, but then they scrubbed something from their website?
Yeah, so I wrote two pieces about the program. In the first piece, I point out that, well, they have a web page for Rise Up, their the fellowship. They advertise that this fellowship is only people who are eligible are people who are committed to diversity. And they also say, they have kind of a list of things that the fellows should be committed to. Diversity is one of them. Another is social justice. After I published that article, before I published this next one, just earlier this week, I looked at the webpage again, and they've scrubbed the word social justice. They've scrubbed the word diversity. But it's still pretty clearly a program designed to only hire people who have a particular posture towards what they say in the job advertisement now is underserved communities. And that should raise some red flags.
Keep on them, Seiler. You're doing great work here. John Seiler, the Director of Higher Education Policy and a Senior Fellow at the Manhattan Institute. Always great stuff. Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
That is great. And yeah, there's a lot of end runs going on in a lot of this. Sue, we're going to segue into a little NCAA tournament talk here in just a moment, but I wanted to focus on something that I saw in the Wall Street Journal here a couple of days ago from an athlete. We hear from, certainly Riley Gaines. We've had other athletes who have been, put in very uncomfortable positions because of Will Thomas and other athletes. We've seen this exposed in Maine recently with some high school athletes, right? And some people trying to take a stand. So there is a woman by the name of Mina Svard, who is, I believe, Swedish, who wrote a piece. It's a very short piece in the Wall Street Journal about how she was essentially a victim in all this. And she said, it's been 3 years since swimmer Leah Thomas, born William, won the gold medal in the 500-yard freestyle at the NCAA Division I Women's Championship. It wasn't until the release of President Trump's February 5th executive order keeping men out of women's sports that the U.S. government established a clear policy protecting the integrity of female athletics. This step, while welcome, isn't enough, she says. The official results of past competition should be corrected to align with reality. This is a very interesting point, right? Male competitors should be removed and the rank of affected women increased accordingly. I've never really thought of it from this perspective, but I completely agree.
Yes.
And listen to how she explains it. She says, this is personal. Being honest about it here. In 2019, when I was a sophomore at East Texas A&M University, I was assigned second place in the finals of the NCAA Division II women's 400-meter hurdles. The video from that event shows me racing in lane 8. In lane 4 is C.C. Telfer of Franklin Pierce University, who competed for that school's men's team in 2016 and 2017. Craig Telfer ranked 390th among NCAA Division II men.
There you go.
C.C. Telfer destroyed the women's field
yep.
and crossed the finish line almost 2 seconds before me, becoming the first known transgender-identified athlete to win an NCAA title. By the
way, that's fair.
Did you know the hurdles are different than they're lower for women
of
than
course.
Men? Right? So when you think about that, and she says, that made me the first collegiate woman to be told her victory was worth less than a man's feelings.
Unbelievable.
She says, I cried a lot that day, not because I lost, but because of how I lost. I also
right.
knew I wasn't the only victim. Ugh. Every time a male athlete enters a female competition, a woman gets cut from the roster to make room. Why are we even talking about
it's
this?
It's ridiculous.
Men have enormous athletic advantages over women, as she say, which is why, as she said, which is why women's hurdles are 9 inches shorter than men's. Yeah.
Right?
I don't think I knew that. Olympic gold medal winning times for the men's 400 meter are about 5 seconds faster than for women. That's a difference of about 10%. That's an eternity
yep.
in, that or swimming or sports like that.
Yep.
She says, I'm a people pleaser and I don't like to upset people, a stereotypical female quality that trans activists often exploit to suppress dissent. It took me a year before I found the nerve to post my feelings about the race on Instagram. When C.C. Telfer alerted supporters to my post, I was denounced as a transphobe and a racist
uh-huh.
and received harassment and threats.
Uh-huh.
C.C. Telfer went on to write a book and was profiled by the New York Times Magazine in an article titled, For My People, A Transgender Woman Pursues an Olympic Dream.
I just
threw up in my mouth
yes.
a little bit. I really did. That dream collapsed in 2021 when he failed the testosterone test. She says, I don't expect I'll ever be profiled in a fawning magazine feature,
nope.
but I did accomplish one thing that will always fill me with pride. In 2019, I was the fastest female 400-meter hurdler. At any Division II school. It's been 5 years since that honor was stolen from me. I want it back. And let me just say this. We hear this excuse from the trans activists. Oh, there's only 9 athletes that this affects. I don't care if C.C. Telfer was the only Totally. Man with a penis that took something away from women. I don't care.
100%.
It's enough to take it back. It's disgusting that anyone, and I mean anyone, would defend this. It's indefensible. Yes. And you know what? 98% of the people in this country know that. I mean, we talk about these 80-20 issues. I'm sick and tired of that. It's 98-2.
Pretty much.
And for those lefties that might think that they can, you know, die on that high horse, put yourself in the situation if your daughter was an athlete in high school, junior high school, or collegiate, and some dude with a penis wanted to take, listen to the standing. I want to repeat that again, because this was a dude that was 390th amongst NCAA Division II men, and then won the title. Oh, yeah, that's really super fair. We can explain that.
She
is proud. Mm-hmm. They are proud.
That's
because
what's so...
they call themselves women, so then they are women. It's revolting. And you know what? It's stopping a little bit, and I think that she's right. Take those awards back.